As well as all the product descriptions too. So it should be interesting.
Yes.
I'm excited. I'm excited to hear about your first week next week.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I'll dish.
Oh, and hello everyone. This is Spilling Ink Live, your favorite. What are we calling ourselves now?
Broadcast?
I don't know. That doesn't have enough pop. We need some more flair here. Come on. What do we have?
A web show.
A game show?
No games. Our prizes aren't that good.
Oh. Well, we're Spilling Ink Live. We're authors, and we talk about words and stuff. And it's great. It's good fun. Yeah, this is a cattail that I sometimes use when I'm broadcasting here. This is Ms. Leah, the tangler of headphone cords. She's going to rip them out of my ears soon. On your left, we have the marvelous Katie Salitis.
Yes.
In her fancy shirt. Man, she looks great tonight. Wait, we've got to highlight this. Look at Katie. She's looking great tonight.
I combed my hair. Aren't you proud?
You know, every time I tell my wife she looks really especially good that day, she's like, "Thanks. Yeah, I took a shower today." I'm like, "Oh, okay. Well, that's good." And then on the right, in her casual attire, because it is casual Friday, J.E. Taylor. Wait, is this Saturday today?
It's Saturday.
Casual Saturday, guys.
It's not Saturday Night Live.
Well, it is Saturday night and we are live, right?
Yes, exactly.
So, and then you have me, the famous, the infamous. And look, I'm not wearing casual. Look, I'm wearing Harley shirt and I've got like this little vest thing over. I'm looking good. I've got my little fancy watch. I've got my fancy beads going on. It is the Jason Lavelle, of course.
You are the voice of Spilling Ink.
The voice of Spilling Ink. Okay. Our guests tonight are both new to the show, which is very exciting because we have a lot of repeat guests that are good friends of ours and we love having them on. And what we love even more than that, though, is making new friends. I can't see them or their names, but I know that in the bottom left-hand corner is Care Marshall.
Hi.
Yep, that's you. Okay, there we go.
There I am.
And on the bottom right, we have Lynn Bachman. How are you tonight, Lynn?
I am doing good. Nervous, good.
Nervous? Oh, okay. Well,
don't be nervous.
No nerves there.
You know, this show is pretty intense, and we've actually broken some authors. They've walked away from writing and never to return. Okay, so before we get too into the crazy, since you are new to the show, I'd really like it if each of you could tell us a little bit about what you write, why you write, kind of how you got into it. And we're going to do eeny, meeny, miny, mo, catch a writer by the toe. If she hollers, let her go. Eeny, meeny, miny, Lynn Bachman.
Hi.
tell us what you write, Lynn.
I go by the pen name L. Bachman, but I don't mind being called Lynn or Lynn Lesher, which is my actual name. I write horror, dark fantasy. I decided to go into a new venue, and I'm doing what's the term? Oh my God, that's great.
Poetry.
I'm on live TV.
Poetry.
Poetry. But it's a special kind of poetry. It's like dark poetry. I think it's the term.
We could just say dark poetry. That works for me.
Fine. Professionalism right out the window. Anyways, I decided to try that. You actually read some of my stuff for me when you on Facebook.
Yeah, I had my women's show, and you submitted a few poems to that, which I really appreciated because they were beautiful.
Oh, thank you. But yeah, that book is called All of My Everything.
Which is a fantastic name, too.
Thank you. I figured it fit, but I played with the title a little bit. I didn't put, like, everything all in one word. I got a lot of crap about that. I'm like, look, I like to play with words. Mm-hmm. I'm a writer. Leave me alone. Like, don't have a book. That's the problem you have with it, is the title. But, yeah.
Don't make me kill you in my own stories.
Well, that's right. That's right.
Get our revenge.
Well, and we're writers. We love to play. That's what we do. We play with words. You know, I'm releasing a short story collection in January, and it's got a really weird title. It's called A Flutter of Darkness. And it's weird because, you know, a flutter is a gathering of butterflies or moths, and you know, it's all very, very dark stuff. And I was like, oh, this kind of fits. But when I asked the graphic design guy to make it, he was like, are you sure that's what you want to call it? I'm like, yeah, dude, it's all right. It's going to be fine. Oh, all right. Well, Care Marshall, I love your name, by the way, Care.
Thank you.
I mean, I keep wanting to add that Y, and I love it that I don't do it. Like, you have to show restraint, even just say your name. It's great. Well, so tell us a little bit about you. Tell us what you write.
Children's, young children's, I guess they call it young adult as well. Magic fantasy, coming of age stuff. This is my first book here, The Lonely Phoenix, but I am working on book two, and that's going to have a little bit of dark stuff in it. So a little bit of, you know, war and love, you know, tearing and stuff like that. So
when you say young adult, what age are you, do you think you're shooting for with this book?
I was going for somewhere around 8 to 14, but I have 70-year-olds reading it and loving it too, so not everyone that's read it can't wait for the book two to come out.
No, that's awesome. So yeah, like Jane said, that's that'd be considered middle grade. So that's a good area, and that's for a lot of kids, that's when they're really starting to get into reading. So that's a great time to catch them and really kind of engage that audience and help move them forward in the reading world. So cool. So well, what about my two co-hosts? What are you guys doing? Because you have some big news here. I just saw a cover up on Facebook. Tell us about your project.
Well, it's out on pre-order.
Yeah, it's up on Facebook. You better start.
It's not on pre-order, Katie. We sent it to our newsletter.
We are so close to finishing book two right now, which I think I have to say we need to pat ourselves on the back, because the speed at which we have gotten two of the three books done is just fabulous. Like, I didn't think we were actually going to pull it off, but we have, and so it's amazing, and it's super motivating when you do complete something and yes. Like that backing ready to move into the next book. So yeah, book two almost done, book three soon.
Well, tell us about book one though. What is it?
It's the new
somebody have the feed open
on Facebook.
I'm sorry, what?
Oh, there we go. if you have the feed open on Facebook, we'll get feedback coming through. echo.
I'm sorry. I was like, well, I see that we can see live comments, so I was trying to see if I could see them to see what people are saying. And I was I had my phone to the side checking. I won't do it again. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right.
The worst case of feedback we had was this like eternal loop of sound that we couldn't stop for. It was probably a good full minute that we had to go in later and edit out. And it was loud.
So, I got busted. That's great. Thought I was being sneaky. I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay. You're fine.
I've done it too. And I'm like,
yep. Well, and I can't see comments. Are there any comments, Katie?
I haven't seen any yet.
Okay.
I've got Facebook open on one screen, and I've got ours open on the other. So if something pops through, we'll see it.
Okay, cool. So you ladies were about to tell us about book one of whatever it is that you didn't tell us you're writing.
That's right. The snarky cat and his demon-killing sidekick.
Yep. And it's called, the series is Running from the Devil. And the first book is Beneath, and that pre-order is up for December 15th. We're going to have the paperback book. Oh, my God, I can't speak tonight. The paperback out in November. So a month ahead of the ebook. So
it's so exciting.
Yeah, it
And it's been honestly, you know, when you work with another author, your styles do have to mesh well in order for it to work properly. And I was worried about being the one dragging everybody down because I write slower than Jane. So I was like, oh my God, I'm going to have to keep up with her. But we've done really well. We've been able to like catch each other up. If I skip a couple chapters because I've got an idea for something down the line, Jane's always able to find that bridge to make the two sections work seamlessly. And it's been really good.
And then we layer as we edit. So, you know, my husband read book one before the final edits, and he said he couldn't tell Katie's writing versus mine, which is a big wow. compliment to both of us.
That's awesome. So every
to see if he could identify my writing.
And so all of you ladies write fantasy of some kind, which is kind of exciting. You know, I like to ask our guest, what got you into the fantasy world? How did you get started with it?
I've always enjoyed reading. I'm an avid reader, but the writing part, I was never in my wildest dreams did I think I was ever going to be a writer. I got bit by the writing bug really late in life, actually like 2 years ago. And it was like a movie just coming through my head. I couldn't stop thinking about it. And I was like, my husband said, write it down. So I wrote it down, but it looked like journal form. I was just like writing a letter to myself, you know, just writing it. And I didn't know any formats or anything. And I just, you know, put it down on paper and then sent it off to, you know, him to fix up and someone else to edit through. And, you know, it happened. But yeah, it just came to me.
That's awesome. And I like that you pointed out that your first time writing through was like journal style entry and you just wrote everything down. Because when I teach classes on creative writing, I tell people not to worry about their first draft. Let it be whatever comes out, word spew on the page, because that's how you're going to finish a story. If you get so stuck on this word or that sentence or this chapter, you never finish. But if you just let it flow in whatever form it comes, you'll get to the end of that story. And then you've got something to refine.
Yeah, well, that's what worked for me. So I think that's just the way I'm meant to do it, I guess. It just, you know, it comes through. I like everything just comes through as a movie part, and I just write it down and then deal with it all later. You know,
there you go. There you go. Exactly.
Oh, is it my turn? I'm sorry.
No.
I just don't want to interrupt, and I'm having a little bit of like lag.
So oh, like, okay. Okay, it's all good. No, I was just putting that comment up from Patricia Annette there.
Yeah.
Oh, is that you putting those up? Because I keep seeing them pop up in front of me. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're trying to cover your face, Kara. It's okay.
That's what it's doing. It's like this big. That's okay.
We can always do this, where we take you and make you big, and then comment over. I love StreamYard. You can play around with all kinds of little features.
Oh, look, Rebecca has a comment for you two ladies. She says she agrees. You can't tell if it's Jane or Katie writing in their co-authored book. It's so good.
Thank you so much for being one of the beta readers and getting it back so quickly.
We did. We were running under the gun. That was during the summer when I had some family issues come through. And our editor gave us an extra little bit on our deadline. And I put the call out to my private reader group. I was like, please, guys, if anybody can turn around a beta read in a week, I will love you forever. And we had a bunch of people who did. They signed up, turned the beta read around with their notes and everything. Like within.
And they gave us great notes.
Yeah. So it was like, oh, thank you.
And I think we addressed most of them. So it was wonderful.
Yeah. And the book is stronger because of it. You know, beta readers out there, we love you for what you do. You are super important.
Absolutely. My main beta reader is Katie, so I could never read the book.
Yeah, no, I can't beta read my own stuff. No, that doesn't work. No. You know what you meant to say, so you just automatically fill in the blanks and you don't see it on the page.
We're not censoring care.
Yes. thanks
so for ranting.
What is this theater reading thing that you're talking about? Where do you send your stuff? Where? What? See, like, I'm doing all this stuff. So.
Oh, my God.
Give me.
We need to tell you about beta reading.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Katie? Wait.
It's our section. Instead of teach Jason, it's going to be teach care today.
And this is Katie Salitis with a new teach care section.
Oh, I get to do it? All right.
On what is beta reading?
Beta readers. Those are considered like your test subjects before a book goes out to the editor. It's your last chance to get feedback from real readers on what needs to be fixed, corrected, maybe more fleshed out before it goes into editing, where once it's through the editor, you can't make too many changes other than the editorial changes. So these are people who read within the genre, people that you trust with your manuscript in its raw form before it's published. So people that you don't aren't going to send it out, you know, piracy, all that fun stuff. People that you have worked with. Sometimes authors can be great beta readers for you because they know the genre, they know the expectations of a book, they understand plot structure. But usually you pick about, I'd say, 3 to 5 people, let them have a chance to read your book beforehand. Sometimes you can give them leading questions on what you're looking for in feedback. Or sometimes you just say, read it and tell me what you think. And you get that feedback from them that helps you refine different aspects of the story. That makes sense?
Yes, thank you. I guess I was doing that kind of without knowing it was beta reading. So, yeah.
Now, where to find them can be difficult because you have to be able to trust these people with your manuscript. So a lot of times it's going to come from people that you know closely or in your local author's circle. Or, you know, maybe if it's not local, online author circle, your tribe.
Yes, well, and it shouldn't be family.
No.
Honestly, it should not be family. Somebody who says, oh, I love it. I love your writing. And they'll not tell you harsh truths, you know, because as Rebecca said, you know, the beta read is your first bloodletting. That is so true.
Well, and beta readers answer a very, very important question for you before you go any further in the process, and that is, do they like your book? Is your book enjoyable? Because if none of your beta readers are enjoying your book, then you have a bigger question that you need to answer. It's like, you know, where did we go wrong here? What can I do to restructure this so that it's more enjoyable? Yes, and you do have to trust right them there. To hurt you.
That's, you know, the most important thing right there.
Yeah, you need people who are a little rough around the edges, and you know will tell it how it is. And I know, because I know some of the people that you know care, that you know people that will tell you how it is. And that is an extremely important thing. I have my friends that will give me nice, flowery, good reviews all the time and make me feel good. And I need those people too. I send them my books too, but they're not my critical reviewers. They just make me feel good about what the other people are saying. So,
So
having both is not a bad idea.
Oh, Jason, which one am I?
You know what? You're kind of, I would say, neutral, chaotic.
My publishing partner, the other Jason from Michigan, calls me the bitch with the red pen.
Oh! Language.
Oh, Lynn, I'm sorry she said the bad language word. I'm so sorry.
Sorry. And it was funny because he says, I just imagine you dressed up in leather with a whip. I'm like, no.
To which you replied, why am I?
Yeah.
Yummy. Oh, goodness. So yes. Care, I know you talked about this just a little bit. Yes, tactfully brutal.
Yes.
So Care, tell me what your writing process is like. You know, when you you finished your first book, and now that you're writing your second one, how is your writing process going into the second one? What are you doing the same or different?
It is so severely different because from my first, we were in our home, and the second one, I have moved lived in four different places in the last 6 months. So it has been nothing like the first at all. So right now it's a lot of note writing. I like to take tons and tons of notes because I drive around all day for my work, and I'll just like do that daydreaming thing where, you know, you're driving, but you're daydreaming at the same time. And okay, I'll get this good stuff and whip over, and like, I'll, you know, thank goodness these phones, I'll just talk into my phone really quick and put all my notes in there. And then I get home and I write them all down. And from there, then I start.
Oops.
Oh, what happened?
Different from the first, for sure. The first, I would go into my office. You know, this is my new office. If you can see the whole thing, there's just boxes piled everywhere still. You know, so it's kind of crazy. I haven't even really delved in because we just put desk up, like, I don't know, 4 days ago. So I'll get back to you on the second book and how it's coming once we, get, you know, the office set up. But the first one, you know, I would go into my office and shut the door and, you know, like I said, it would just stream through. I swear it comes to me like a movie and I transcribe, you know, it, and most of it's there and I have to put in very little. Like, yeah, the names weren't there. I had to come up with the names, you know, and some things to say, but I would swear to God, it's like all there for me, you know?
Yeah. Me too. I think it's not something that all writers have that all writers see, because I've talked to so many people, but I see it the same way. I the scene will kind of unspool as a movie. And then I'm just trying to remember everything so I can jot it down, because if I don't right then, but it is freaking gone. I mean, I don't ever get it back. It's kind of fun that way. You know, I've been writing so many short stories now, and it'll just be the littlest scene that'll kind of flip by in my mind. I'm like, okay, I've got to grab that right now. Cause that's it. That's the story. But yeah, you know, so it's kind of fun that way. Well, what about you, Lynn? What's your writing process?
Usually it's, I'll get an idea. It comes from anywhere. Sometimes I'll be sleeping. Nightmares make really good scary stories. And I just write it down and then I'll just work on it. And sometimes the story, it just won't work out. And I put it to the back burner and I'll work on something else and I just keep going. And then something will click. When I was working on Maxwell Demon, I actually had the idea for Human Ouija, a short story I won an award for and became a bestseller because of. I was writing that before I started Maxwell Demon, and I couldn't get through it, so I had to push it to the back burner, and I started on Maxwell Demon, and I actually published out Maxwell Demon and I believe another short story for a book that Burning Willow Press did. And then I went back to Human Ouija because, I don't know, it just weird magic or craziness, I don't know. And it just worked out and I was able to get it done. It's just a really messy, messy, messy process. I've got tons of notebooks. I've got little things on napkins and memos, and got a notebook next to the bed just in case something pops in as I'm falling asleep. It's just grabbing it where you can and trying to work it out. And if I can't force it, then I'll put it to the side and just keep working on what I can work on.
Yeah. Well, you know what my last idea came from? Because with all of my stories, I always take something from real life, something that I've experienced, that my wife's experienced, that friends have told me about. And I use those as kind of the cornerstone, if you will, of the whole story. That way it feels like it has a little bit more backbone to me and I can build on that. It gives me a starting point. And that's oftentimes the hardest thing is getting that starting point. I know I want to write a novel. I know I want to write a poem or a story. Where the hell do I start? Well, using real life events really can help. Even if they seem like they're insignificant, it can really kind of kick you off. And I was having lunch with a good friend, actually Abby from the library, Katie, you know her, a couple weeks ago. And she was telling me about a trip she took to Gettysburg with her son, and how they went to visit on a tour of the witness trees. And I didn't have any idea what a witness tree is. But a witness tree, it was a tree that was there at the time of the event, at the time of the battle or the murder or whatever it is. It's going to be murder for me. And they're still around today, so you can see them. And some people believe that they have memories, that they've captured some of that energy. And I was like, oh my Lord, that's going to be my next story, ladies and gentlemen. The witness priest. I was like, oh, so creepy. Imagine sitting down next to this and all of a sudden you're flooded with who knows what, but that's what it's going to be.
You touch the tree and you can feel the memories.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be intense, man.
You can transcend into the tree.
Do y'all want me to explain why I got into fantasy as well?
Yeah. Yes, did we not? Okay. Did we not talk to you about that?
No, you got sidetracked.
Oh, man.
It's an important subject. So I figured, let it go.
Well, we always
beta readers are so important.
We all want you to tell us for 20 minutes straight about how you got into fantasy.
The answer is, I don't know. I didn't even know I was writing it. I honestly didn't. I knew I was writing horror, but I didn't know I was writing fantasy mixed with horror. And I gave another writer a read of my stuff, like in the beta reader set. And they were like, this is fantasy. Your style that you write in is dark fantasy. This is fantasy. And I was like, really? No. I'm not writing fantasy. But that's what I was falling into, and I didn't even know it. I don't purposely go in thinking fantasy. I end up going, what scares me? Let me get this out in a story. It's kind of therapeutic, mm-hmm. which sounds so corny. I'm sorry, but that's just how it works out.
That doesn't sound corny. That's the way it is. I mean, okay. Well, you bring up something else, you know, and Jane and Katie up there are like hardened professional writers. So I don't know how much of this might apply to them. I don't consider myself a hardened professional. I'm just this sweet, lovable guy that's, you know, super approachable. I mean, I don't know where I'm going with that. But anyhow, how much of ourselves are we putting into these books? You know, I'd like to know from Karen Lynn, you know, how much of it is really coming from you, and how much of it are you just completely fabricating?
Wow. I would say that there's definitely a bit that comes from me when it comes to the learning lessons learned and stuff that the Phoenix goes through. Yeah, I would say that I had to dig deep into my soul for, you know, stuff that I've gone through to put in there. But I don't know, maybe 90% flows through as a movie, and, you know, 10% is me. It's hard to judge what's what, you know, what's coming through and what's coming out.
I'm sorry, Care. I had to put that up. Oh, Rebecca, I'm not hard. Thank you, Rebecca. We really enjoy you.
She's got great comments.
Well, Lynn, what about you? Because I've read your poetry, and your poetry mm-hmm. is extremely personal. At least yeah. that's the way it reads. So mm-hmm. so tell me, what is it like for you?
With the poetry, I really needed to work on issues from my childhood. And I came up with some new things, as I had mentioned to you back then. This was a new one. But I really wanted to do this to get this out of there. It was like I almost had to get it out of my system. It was like lingering and lurking over me. Like I had to do it. And I was like, well, I've been doodling and doing poetry kind of in the margins. I never really considered myself a poet. For years and years, since I was a kid, going through the things I was writing about. So that is extremely personal. It's really raw. It's very emotional from what I've been told. With things like Maxwell Demon, that was a story that originally started when I was a kid. So at the time, it was a way of escapism, escaping what was going on around me. So it's got like, in an interview once a long time ago, I got asked, are any of the characters based on myself? And I said the closest one that I could think of that would be kind of me would be a character in the second book of the series, which is called Harvest, and the character's named Dante. Sorry, you made the picture bigger, and I instantly had to look up. Because it's like a conversation with myself. But I can, it's not like I purposely go in and going, this is the character and I want to make it exactly like me. It's more of when you go through things in life, you can't help but bring that out in a character. Happy times, sad times, an abusive parent, a sibling that you're having a squabble with, it just comes out. You can't help it. So it just happens, not intentionally, but you can see it. Like there's a character I wrote in a story that's unpublished now, and it was an elderly woman, and she will smack you to get your attention. Like she's very, it's in a playful way, but also like a stern elder way. It's hard to describe. And she was inspired by a way that I had encountered an older family member. And I was like, she's straight from a book. She needs to be in a book. And I hadn't read a book with a character like that. So I kind of was inspired by her. So it's not just yourself you put in your stories or your characters. It's people around you. You'll pick a trait out, not knowing. It's very subconscious to me. Sorry, I rambled.
Would you agree on this? Let me ask a question, because I like what you're touching on here. And I think that maybe if our characters that we're writing aren't exactly us or a part of us, they're still being filtered through our consciousness. So
Right. We're
writing a character we've seen do something, or if we're writing a character that maybe is different than us, we're still looking at their choices through our own filter. Even though they're going to make that choice as a character, it's still going to come through us just a little bit. So you're still putting a bit of yourself into them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, isn't it the tagline as being a writer is write what you know?
Yes.
And what my always reply to that was, if you don't know it, research it, and then you do know it.
That's right.
And I was told
once a long time ago that I can write really great dramatic scenes because of all the drama I've gone through. And it's not like it's intentional, or people that write drama or really intense scenes do it intentionally. It just comes out because you experience it. Those emotions have to come out.
Well, and I believe that we all leave little bits and pieces of ourselves in everything that we write. And you mentioned writing about a woman you had known, and Katie had said it's all filtered through us, and that's true. Everything we touch or hear or see or smell or taste, it's all being filtered through us, and that comes through on the page. And when you become a good writer, you're able to write a little bit more objectively about things and not be so colored by your own experiences. However, they're still there. They're still influencing you. You know, I've noticed after years now that in every one of my books, there's some kind of main character that has some kind of developmental or mood disorder or mental illness. And that's because I've struggled with those things my entire life. And I didn't know I was doing it, but they became part of my characters. And I'm not sorry about it. You know, that's right, Rebecca, because you are so funny. You're so funny. You know, I know our, you know, Stephen King, who is one of my kind of my author heroes, you know, had said in his book on writing, you must kill all your darlings. You know, we must get rid of the things that are only dear to us and make the whole manuscript something that appeals to everyone. But some of them I don't. You know, some of them stay in there because they are kind of a precious part of me, even if it's something terrible. And I don't quite want to let them go. But Jane, I see you kind of rocking in your seat up there. What do you want to add?
Well, yeah, no, I think you're right. I think there's a part of us in every character we write.
Oh no, I'm so sorry, Jane. Continue. Okay.
Inside joke.
Sorry.
I had the notes up here, but I can't see them anymore. I don't know why somebody stole them from me. But you know, back to what Lynn was saying about, you know, nightmares and stuff like that, and those are great sources of book fodder. I mean, one of my books, Georgia Rain, was absolutely my greatest fear when my kids were little. So I wrote it.
what was the fear? Or is that a spoiler?
No, children are kidnapped in that book. Oof.
Yeah, that's yeah. not cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, by a serial killer. So yes. and yeah, so that was my greatest fear. And I'm like, I got to get rid of this. So I wrote the book. I still was afraid of it, but for some reason it's cathartic that you get it out and okay, it's not going to keep you up at nights anymore. I don't know. At least not me.
So was your fear of you being kidnapped or of your children being kidnapped?
My children.
Yeah. Mine is because my children and myself are all yes. terribly clumsy. We are idiotically clumsy. My fear, and it's a recurring dream, is that we go to visit the Grand Canyon and they just start falling off. And I could see it happening. they are not coordinated. They would just go.
I have that fear, Jason.
Too many bones. I can't count.
So we have a question from the audience here to get us off of my kids tumbling into the Grand Canyon. Have you ever felt better about your past by writing about it? In my novel, yes. some of that has a lick of truth. Why do we say lick of truth? I mean, is that just supposed to be just like a really, is it like a lick of a lollipop, just a tiny amount of flavor?
Maybe.
Okay. So what do you guys think? Does this catharsis lead to personal growth for any of you? Care, Lynn?
Well, I haven't wrote about, you know, any of my past experiences, really, not in this book here. So I don't know. Maybe it'll come out in book two when I go a little darker.
Okay. That's fair enough. And hopefully yours aren't too horribly dark because you're writing for middle grade. We don't want to terrify them too much. But Lynn, what about you?
I'm sorry. I totally feel like I'm like the broken author guest because of what I've said. I'm sorry, Care, that I'm not as dark as you, or I'm not as light as you. I'm just one person writing stories.
Hey, trying to feel better. It's good to have dark and light. That's okay.
Yeah. As Sirius Black said, there can be no light without the dark. We all have light and dark inside of us, Harry. It's what we choose to do that matters.
to answer the question, yeah, it has helped me. I didn't know that with some of it, like with the poetry, that it was going to help me as much as it did. It's almost like going to therapy, you know, with... I don't know about you guys, but for me, it was like, instead of paying somebody a bunch of money for an hour, I could just get all this out.
No, I hear you.
Yeah, it helped me let go.
Yeah, and that is a, I would count that as a win if you're able to use your writing to better yourself, better your psyche. I definitely count that as a win. And yes, much, much cheaper than therapy.
Yeah. I'm probably still going to be crazy, but it helped a little bit.
Well, I think that for me at least, because there was a time in, I think it was last summer now that, I went pretty dark. You know, my, personally, mentally, I was in pretty bad shape, and I didn't do a whole lot of writing, and the writing I did do was just horrific. I mean, it was probably the most disgusting, brutal stuff I've ever written, where I'm just, and it's not necessarily blood and guts. It's just, I was tormenting characters that didn't need to be tormented. And looking back now, I was like, okay, I'm trying to release this demon, trying to get rid of it, trying to purge it from my system. And ultimately it did take, you know, the help of doctors to help me get through that. But I do think that by writing about something, we are in some small way, at least acknowledging it, and having any kind of knowledge is good for us. So, yeah. What about you, Katie?
I agree. I mean, you guys have all said it. It's, you know, exercising the demons, and it's not only cheaper than going to therapy, it's also you get to go more often, whereas you're not waiting till the next week to see your therapist. You can write any time of the day. You can wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning if you need to and write. It does help. It does purge your feelings just a little bit, to write them all down. And it's that element of non-judgmental sharing too, because just because you write something doesn't mean anyone else has to read it. And there's that freeing element of it. You make the choice whether or not you let somebody read it, but you're able to write with that freedom and really get all the words out.
Absolutely. Uh-oh. What's happened? Leah's stepping on the computer. Am I still here? Yeah,
you're still there, but you're slowly being like strangled to death.
I know. I know it. Oh, goodness. So, you know, Care, when you're writing for middle grade, do you feel a certain responsibility to guide children in one direction or another with your story? Are you trying to build in, sorry, that's the cat, not me. do you feel any responsibility to add like morals or anything like that?
There are quite a few morals or good points, you know, in the story that I have written, you know, that I believe are, you know, essential for kids nowadays to not have that, you know, like Fee, she wants to find love, but, you know, to not have that prince come save her, you know? Yeah. So she, you know, learns that it's herself that is going to ultimately, you know, take her through her life and the choices that she has to make.
Okay. Oh, well, Rebecca, am I the only one that has the opposite reaction to writing that stuff down? You know, it's... Yes. Yeah, you might be. Yes, you are. Rebecca is a freak. I'm sorry. You're an outcast. we love you, Rebecca. Rebecca is actually my publisher for my new collection of stories, and she is a really great lady. She scared the hell out of me the other day when we had a video conference, and so I opened it on my phone, and I was sitting by Heather, and it's her, and it shows her like down to here, but there's nothing covering her, and I'm like, oh, what's going on here? I don't want my wife to see my publisher naked. What the hell is happening? And she's just laughing and laughing and laughing. And she had some kind of low cut shirt of some sort on. But anyhow, that was pretty funny. She's got a great sense of humor. And I think that having a publisher or anybody you're working with, having a great sense of humor, man, does that make a frickin' hell of a lot of difference? It yes. really does. Oh my gosh, it makes life so much easier. Yes, yeah, I know. You're definitely not a normie. But you know, it's funny. As Rebecca, you may have said that in jest, your comment about having the opposite reaction to writing stuff down, but the first time that I ever saw a therapist as an adult, I did have the opposite reaction that I should have. I went home feeling worse because I had kind of stirred up this pot of really negative, terrible things. And I went home and I was just an absolute wreck. And I don't blame the therapist. I think it was the wrong day or the wrong hour or the wrong month, whatever it was. But it, you know, sometimes you can have that opposite reaction. When you bring up all the bad shit, it does have to go somewhere. Yeah. Wait, why are we talking about this depressing stuff? Katie, yeah, is that you're doing?
You went dark.
I'm sorry. I went down the rabbit hole and brought y'all with me. I'm sorry.
Oh, you did not say that, Rebecca. You did not tell me. You scared the crap out of me. Oh,
what was
goodness.
Heather's reaction, though, is what I want to know.
Oh man, I went in the other room. Like, oh man, if she sees this, that's it for Rebecca. Oh crap. Yeah. So have you guys, I have a project that I'm working on. I want to talk to you guys about. Have any of you ever made a book trailer? Yeah? Okay. What was people's reaction to it?
Not what you expect.
Yeah.
To be honest, yeah. You put so much effort into it and you're so excited about it. And when you initially post it, let's say on social media, people are like, oh, that's great. Mm-hmm. but it doesn't, I don't think it really does anything. It's not like a big movie trailer where it's going to gain a lot of traction. It's just kind of like, oh, cute. You know, something you'd put on the fridge if it were an art project.
Yep. Yep. That's kind of how I feel about them too. And so I am working on a project to do something a little bit different. It's a book trailer for my new book. However, I'm actually filming the entire thing like a horror movie, like if you're seeing the new It trailer, something like that. So I have actresses and models and actors that I'm working with, and we are filming this, and we're taking a couple small scenes out of each story and putting them together with a very cool custom song that my friend Alyssa Blummer has recorded for me, and we're going to start something really, really neat. And I'm hoping that people will see this and kind of rethink what they want to do for their own book trailers, because I think that if we give our audience something really good quality and engaging to watch, it might actually help. Whereas most book trailers now are still images that have the Ken Burns effect on them. So they slide across the screen with text on them. And I'm not dogging anyone for making those, because that's what everyone makes. Because most people can't afford to go to Hollywood and make a trailer. But, you know, with a little bit of knowledge in video equipment, I think that I'm going to be able to make something cool here. And I'm hoping that people will dig it and say, hey, you know, how can we do something like that? Because I'd love to be able to teach people to do something like this. So we'll see. It's gonna, we started filming 2 weeks ago, and it'll probably take me another month to finish it, because I have to kind of go based on models and actors' schedules. Since I'm not paying anyone a whole lot, I have to work when they allow it. So I think it'll be an interesting thing, though.
Oh, I can't wait to see the finished product.
Yeah, it should be exciting. I have. Oh man, in one of the stories is called Honey, and in this story there is a pathogenic spirit, you know, a demon, if you will, that's been poured into this woman using honey. It's kind of the conduit or the elixir, and in one scene, the scene that I chose for the trailer, she's pretty much being drowned in honey. And so we actually had a model that responded to the casting call. It says, I'm down. I'm game. I want to try it out. So we just shot it a couple days ago, and it was phenomenal. I mean, I could not believe this girl. I was like, I would have choked the second that honey went down my throat. But man, it was incredible. I've got a still shot I can send you, Katie.
I gotta see this. Sounds awesome.
Oh, it was intense, man. But yeah, so it's really cool. And you know what? I think I would love to get into like filmmaking. I think that would be so exciting, you know, and not even just doing your own projects, but doing other people's projects with them. That'd be so fun.
That would be fun.
That can be. Yeah. You got to talk to David.
Yeah.
Our host that we haven't seen in forever.
Yes. Yes. We miss David.
David. He's such a sweetheart. He's a sweetie. He's another one that's on the light side, like you care.
So are book trailers something common, or is that something that you don't usually do or see? They
come in the fashion, out of fashion. I've seen like it seems like they all hit at the same time. And from 2010 till now, there's probably been a good 3 or 4 waves of people just making all these book trailers and then nothing. And they all do, like Jason said, they all kind of follow the same pattern. It's breaking your synopsis up into one-liners and still images that go along with those. Or occasionally you find a little movie clip that might fit the feel of it, but isn't exactly the scene. Yeah. And it's, you know, put together with music, and they are cool looking, but it's not like cinematic quality, you know, actual movie trailer. And I think that's what you're aiming for, Jason.
That's exactly what I'm aiming for. You know, I don't, in fact, there is going to be no, sorry, we've got a cat here. There is going to be no text of any kind until the end, when I'm saying, oh, Leah, off the computer, until the very end, where I'm of course saying, you know, this is available on this date. It's going to be, you know, really sorry, I'm trying to open a picture for you guys. Yeah, so there's not going to be any reading involved. So that makes it a lot easier. You're just going to be able to enjoy the film itself. That's how I want to think of it, as more as a more as a film than something you're just, you know, put together as an advertisement. I want this to be its own little piece of art. So I'm gonna share. Sorry, this cat. She's in rare form tonight. I'm gonna share a screen with you, and I'm gonna warn you right now. It's a little intense. So sorry, working with cats. Stop it, Leah.
Have you guys seen, what is that movie? The Secret Life of Pets. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And we filmed this in broad daylight out in the middle of nowhere in the woods. And so what we did is we actually stopped down the camera way far to make it super dark, and then just had a single pin light right on her face. You can actually see it in her eyes. You can see the reflection of it. But yeah, man, that was... I told her that I wanted to try to get 5 seconds of footage because I didn't want to hurt this girl, and I was worried about it. And and she, that was probably after 10 seconds. I was like, oh my God, you are just a boss lady. So it was pretty incredible. But yeah, anyhow, that's my crazy picture from our video shoot the other day.
It's so cool. Oh, I'm so excited for you.
Yeah, it should be good. Should be good. What is Rebecca saying now? What, Rebecca, Jason's titles could either be horror or porn. I love it. I originally read that as Jason's titties, and I'm like, what is happening here? I don't understand this. Oh, goodness. Oh, yeah. Okay, what were we talking about?
Book trailers.
Oh, yeah, okay. I'm done with the book trailer topic.
Show of hands, who has done a book trailer? Okay.
I've done one of the terrible ones back in the day. Yeah.
And you know, would you agree that what Jason's got planned sounds like it's a step up?
I sure hope so. I do. I mean, but even if it's not, I'm having a hell of a lot of fun with it. And you know what I don't have fun with is applying the Ken Burns effect to stock photos, because that's freaking boring. This is way more fun, and because I'm having fun, I bet other people are going to have fun with it too. So I've got to mute real quick. My wife just sent me a text, so I got to answer.
Uh-oh. Jason's in trouble.
Yeah, no. One of the trailers I had, I actually had a bullet going through blood.
Ooh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. and a shattering mirror, I think that one had. But yeah, the bullet through blood was awesome. So...
I like the idea of trailers, and I would love to see them catch on a little bit more, but they do take a lot of production quality to make good, which becomes another cost. And as most indie authors know, cost and keeping the budget low is like the most important part of producing a book, next to making sure the product is good. Because if you've got a great book, but you have, you know, no way to get it out there because you don't have the money to fund it, there's
right,
you're basically left with nothing.
Yeah. Just getting the book out was, you know, like seriously expensive with all the component parts of it, you know, the editor, the cover, and now I'm going through it all again with the second edition of it, you know, all those costs all over again. So I can't imagine doing a mini movie.
are you self-publishing, Care?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, in I think that everyone in this box has self-published at some point, probably. Maybe Jane, have you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. And I've kind of strayed away from self-publishing to working with a small press because of the cost involved. And with a small press, and I've learned this the hard way. Many, many authors have learned this the hard way. You know, the money should always be flowing to you, not away from you to other people. That's that's your publisher's responsibility. And when you're going with a publisher or in a you know, a small press especially, you get a little bit better royalties, but you know, you're looking at, you know, maybe making 50% of your profits. However, you're not shelling out those huge expenses at the start. And you also have a team that's behind you to help you promote it and use their network. And we were talking about networks earlier. Use their network to help distribute your book to more people, or at least get them in front of more people. That being said, you know, going self-publishing, you have so much more control of everything. You know, you're getting 100% of your profits. You are controlling everything from price to cover design to font, every single thing. That's a wonderful thing. But yeah, that upfront cost can be a real headache, and that's a pain, and especially for editors, which you can't cheap out on, because it's super obvious if you do. You know, so that's tough. It really is.
Yeah, the benefit of being able to find a small press publisher that you can trust is worth the loss of the 50% or so of your royalties, because they can handle so much and they can hold your hands a bit more and help you out with the things that you might not be ready to do. Whether you're self-published or traditional published, you still have to market your books. And so going into it as a self-publisher, it's 100% you. And if you don't know how to do it, you have to learn it yourself. If you go with a small press and you don't know how to do the marketing, 9 times out of 10, that small press publisher is going to have guides for you. They're going to be able to tell you where to go, what to do, who to contact, if they don't already have somebody in the position to do some of that for you.
That's exactly right. And my first small press publisher, who I'm unfortunately still contracted with, did not do that. I'm not super happy with that. But Three Furies Press, who I'm working with now, you know, as soon as I signed on with them, they sent me a packet via email that says, you know, this is kind of what you can expect. These are the things that we recommend you do for marketing, and go step by step on how to set up accounts here, and what they hope that you can do and how they can help you. And I think that's extremely important. But like Katie said, even with a publisher, it doesn't matter if it's small press. Even if you are with a big five publisher and you have made it, you know, I have talked to Tosca Lee on this show and on my other show and interviewed her live, and she is a New York Times bestseller, and she's still hiring her own publicist and doing her own marketing, going to her own gigs that her publisher didn't set up, because you have to keep yourself in front of readers. And me, I'm financing this book trailer. It's not costing me a ton of money because I can do all of it myself, but it's not something that my publisher is doing. It's something I'm doing because I want to help me and the publisher to be successful with this. So yeah, you know, the work just never ends as an author. It really doesn't. And you know what I recently found out is that another way these authors that have made it bigger are generating income is by going and doing signings and lectures and things like this. It's not just, they're not just doing it for promo work. I wanted to hire Victoria Schwab, who's my fave, to come and do a show here in Holland, Michigan. And so the library and I were talking to her, and it's over $10,000 to get her to come and talk. I mean, but she is the biggest fantasy author in the world right now. And so when they're going and doing this, they're not just doing it to get publicity. They're getting paid. So that's my new goal is I need to be big and famous so I can get paid, man.
That's where I'm at. I'm trying to find those paid gigs. That's why I started teaching seminars on creative writing, was so that I had something that I can offer that isn't just, hey, I want to talk about books or my books. I want to actually help your people understand the process better. And I was able to get my local library to basically, you know, they paid me not a huge amount, but they paid me a stipend, and I was able to come in and teach. And because of that, they've invited me back for more things. So it's a slow process, but yeah, definitely worth doing. And at the end of those lectures, they go, well, what books do you have? And you could possibly sell some books there as well.
Yep, for sure. And, yeah, and that's a great thing, because you're getting your face in front of people, even if it's on the local level and it's 30 or 40 people at a time. Hell, those are 30 or 40 people that have seen your face, and they're much more likely to buy your book than if they hadn't seen your face. You know, that's just the way it is. We as authors, we buy books from people we know, and there's millions and millions of authors out there now. So I'm much more likely to buy all of your books than some just rando that I don't know. Just keep getting your face out there in front of people as often as you can, whether it's on talk shows like this or whether it's on podcasts. There are a million podcasts out there. I run one called The Raven, and I have new authors on all the time. And Care, you're going to be coming on the Raven in probably another month or two. And we'll get to talk to you again then and really dive deep into that story. But that's the important. Where is that music coming from? Do you guys... Do you hear the circus music?
I do.
That's circus like, music. What the hell is going on here?
But it's not here at my house. So.
Not here.
I thought
the end of.
Maybe there's maybe there's cocaine in this pop. I don't know.
I didn't realize you can hear the television through my headset. He's passed away.
Brad, swelling music is he's giving his speech about public speaking.
Yes, exactly. Like,
well, it was freaking me out, man.
Stop the popcorn machine. I stopped the microwave popcorn from happening. So sorry, Jason.
No, it's all. I don't even know what I was talking about. Get yourself in front of people. That's all it's about. Get yourself in front of the right people. You know, Care, you're friends with old Timmy Chismar, and you know, I think that's really where he has made his mark. Is he managed to get himself in front of the right faces time after time, and now he's able to help other people get in front of those right people, because sometimes it really is who you know, but. For the rest of us little people, we just got to get in front of more readers.
There's a benefit to people like Tim who have the drive and the spirit to be able to reach out to people. It's hard to reach out and try and set things up because there's a lot of rejection involved. There's a lot of uncertainty involved. And writers are very sensitive creatures for the most part. And so we shy away from a lot of the potential of rejection. So having a person like Tim who is able to jump out there and say, hey, I want you to meet this person and bridge that gap sometime is great. And that's how
he's got such great energy and he knows those, you know, the ins and outs and how to do everything too. So he makes it so easy.
He's got too much energy sometimes. I can't keep up with him. I'm like, oh my gosh, you're so intense.
You could sell that for $1 million.
Well, all right, guys, we have reached our time tonight, so I want to thank all of you for joining me. You know, Katie and Jane, it's always lovely to see you again. Care and Lynn, it was great to have you on. Thank you so much for coming on the show tonight.
And thank you
for having me. It was great having you guys.
Absolutely, definitely, this has been a good show.
Good. Awesome. All right. For everyone out there watching or listening, thank you. Thank you very much. We love you and we'll see you next week. Good night, everybody.
Bye.